Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our Sunday roundtable. Today is Sunday, December 20th, 2015. Our subject is the universe, including man, evolved by atomic force. Before I get started, Florence, is there anything you wanted to cover today? Florence?
Oh, I will say as we go along, I'm sure it will.
All right.
Some of the things that came to thought will come.
Okay, thank you. Our golden text is Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Who would like to comment on that? What does it mean to you?
I think of how much Mrs. Eddy spoke of beauty of the natural world, of the sky and the flowers, everything. She was always seemed to be very aware of the good and beauty around her.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah, the beauty of God's creation is everywhere. If we would just open our eyes and recognize that it's God's creation.
Stand still long enough to give it proper consideration.
The other day I just happened to catch, it was something on television, it was all about sunrises. And how people for years have just marveled at the beauty of a sunrise. And they had a lot of pictures of people, photography of people taking the sunrise. And then they said before there were the cameras, of course, there were the beautiful paintings of sunrise. And no two are alike. Oh, hi, Benjamin.
Hi, Benjamin.
And they're always just so thrilling to see. And someone was even saying how, you know, they add in your joy for the day and how they calm your mind if you view something beautiful like that. And in that very morning, Gary had left my study. If you don't know it, I believe it's in prose work. Sunrise at Pleasant View, which is like a page and a half, and it is a beautiful statement of the beauty of God's creation. Mrs. Eddy has written it. So, do you have it? Okay.
No.
That's all right. You all can find it and read it because it is just, you know, she loved to write poetry in the way that she describes the sunrise. And so let us appreciate the beauty of God's creation. It's everywhere to see and to behold. And to take in, not to miss it or to be so wrapped up in our own problems or negativity that we don't see it.
On page 376 of the Triades.
Yeah, Sunrise at Pleasant View. You want to read it? Or?
Sure.
It goes with the lesson.
Yes. Who shall describe the brave splendor of a November sky that this morning burst through the lattice for me on my bed? According to terrestrial calculations above the horizon in the east, there rose one rod of rainbow hues, crowned with an acre of eldritch ebony. Little by little, this topmost pall, drooping over a deeply dazzling sunlight, softened, grew gray, then gay, and glided into a glory of mottled marbles, fleecy, faint, fairy blue, and golden specks came out on a background of cerulean hue, while the lower lines of light kindled into gold, orange, pink, crimson, violet, and diamond, topaz, opal, garnet, turquoise, and sapphire, spangled the gloom in celestial space, as with the brightness of his glory. Then thought I, what are we, that he who fashions forever such forms and hues of heaven should move our brush or pen to paint frail fairness, or to weave a web of words that glow with gladdening gleams of God, so unapproachable, and yet so near, and full of radiant relief in clouds and darkness. She paints such a picture.
So take time to see the beauty of God's creation. It's certainly in this lesson. And what did she say when she would see a storm cloud? What did Mrs. Eddy say that she would, when she would see a storm cloud gathering, she would look up and see what?
Face of God.
The face of God. God. Yes. Face of God. Give me goosebumps. And it is true, when you see the beauty, you are seeing, in a way, the face of God. As a couple of weeks ago, Fairley talked about the flowers being hieroglyphs of God, which is from Science and Health. So,
and that stills the storm.
That's what stills the storm. So it's most important that we are aware of this and grateful for it. It will make your day or break it. There's always beauty to be grateful for.
Can I
add? Go ahead.
I was just going to share something. This morning, I was looking out into our garden, and we have several bird feeders, and it was just the most beautiful sight, with bluebirds and cardinals and a couple of different kinds of woodpeckers and chickadees, and they're just so beautiful, and so many more coming and going. And I thought, if I didn't look out there, I wouldn't see that beauty. And also, when we focus on the beauty, I was thinking that when you pick up your binoculars and look even closer, you'll appreciate the detail and more beauty of this beautiful nature. And I was so grateful for it.
Yes.
The picture that Eddie paints is like, it's like I was trying to explain to you the other day, Mary Beth, that be beyond what is actually there. So all these colors and things. And when I do my paintings, I've noticed that since I've started Christian Science and become more aware of all these things, that start to see them in my paintings. They've developed along with my growth in science. It's been wonderful to just enjoy them so much.
Thank you. Yeah, Luann, you've experienced on our magazine some of her beautiful paintings. And, you know, in order to paint or to write poetry, what I love about it is you do have to take a few moments, or more than a few moments, and really look and see and observe and see the beauty of it, whether you're describing it in words or painting it on a picture or taking a photograph, capturing it.
And as we grow, we will also see the finer beauty in the people around us.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I was reading a beautiful story today about Mrs. Eddy. She had, I don't know where she was, it might have been her carriage ride or something, but anyway, she saw a woman who was bent over and crippled or in some way, and Mrs. Eddy could not take her gaze off this person, and the one observing Mrs. Eddy, you know, saw in her eyes this incredible love and tenderness for this woman. And the gaze, when Mrs. Eddy, they said when Mrs. Eddy would gaze on you, it would go deep and penetrating. She could see into your soul. She could see what was the real trouble. And anyway, so other people were talking and doing things, but Mrs. Eddy could not stop thinking about this bent over woman. And in a few moments, that woman straightened herself up and was fine. Mrs. Eddy's tender love and seeing that person correctly, it healed her.
They have a lot of those cases in the Chicago address. If you remember when Mrs. Eddy was in Chicago, and she gave this so-called spontaneous address. A lot of people were spontaneously healed because of this love that she shared.
Yes,
and we should have the same influence wherever we go.
I just had an experience yesterday. I was driving in a car with one of my co-workers, and then there was another person who works in our front desk, and then everybody thought she was very tough. She never smiled people, she never friendly, but she saw me that morning, and she was in her car, and she was very, very happy, very friendly, and then talking to me. So my coworker, who was sitting next to me in the car, she was like, I never see her this happy before, so she can actually be this happy. I said, of course. We're always friendly, and secondly, we are Eagles fans, so we talk about Eagles, we give high five whenever Eagles wins, all that stuff. She's a very friendly person. I never knew that. I've been working for years. I never see her this happy. Then I told my coworker, there's good in everyone, but you just have to see that good for that good to be able to manifest.
Thank you.
That's good. Thank you.
Yeah, you bring it out in people. You either bring it out in people or you see them in a wrong way, and you'll bring that out too. They'll act just according to how you're seeing them. So, go ahead.
Also, you know, when I think about my work as an artist, it's always important that the work shows the balance, it shows also the direction. I keep what's called a healing sketchbook. And every day I just concentrate on knowing that different things that come to me are healed, and I take those aspects of and work on them. And today I showed it to somebody, and they thought about the clarity, and they said that they had a good feeling about what I had done. So I think that's what art is. It's a following God. If we don't follow God, then the artwork doesn't work.
That's beautiful. Thank you. You know, last night, to go along with this, last night our watch was dealing with present perfection, seeing everyone as Christian Scientists, seeing them as they truly are, and this is the absolute, this is what we must see and know to be truth, the present perfection. And Gary wrote something about that on the forum. About...
Oh... Yeah, a practitioner once said that whenever I feel an ache or a pain, to take it as a reminder to thank God that I'm spiritual and not material. That to think of myself as material or anyone else as just material is what is the source of sin, disease, and death. And we should be grateful that we are spiritual. And I found that to be a very healing thing to do, because it's one step farther than just declaring the truth. It's actually being grateful for the truth.
And that is powerful. That's, I would say, even more powerful than the declaring. It's being grateful. That's connecting you to God. And in being grateful, you're denying that you're material or that there's pain or anything else. You're right there with God saying, thank you, Father. When Jesus raised Lazarus, what was it that he did?
Before Lazarus came out of the tomb.
Did he lift his eyes up and thank God?
He did.
He thanked God before he saw the evidence of the healing.
He thanked God that God always is here to hear his prayer and always will. And it was that recognition, thank you, Linda, of that truth, being grateful for it, that prepared the way for Lazarus to rise up. So remember. No, please, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think the gratitude really does say that I trust this. I have faith in this truth. You know, and it's in other words, you're making it your own, as opposed to just saying it, saying it, saying it. The gratitude really brings it to the heart that this is what is true about me. That's what I found.
Beautiful. Yes, it brings it to the heart. It's not an intellectual reading and declaring, but it's feeling it. So if you're in need of healing, thank God now that it's already come to pass, because in truth it has. There is nothing to change or be healed. In truth, you are perfect now. That is the truth. Just as our watch was expressed last night. Everyone is already Christian Scientists. We're not out having this humongous task trying to make everybody into something. God already did it. Behold, it was very good.
It also helps us to start with the right principle, which is the perfect God, perfect man. Because otherwise, you know, subtly you're really admitting the error as the real and then trying to heal it with the truth you're declaring. But to start like Gary, you know, said it on the forum, really makes you start off with the right principle. Then working, you can get the right results.
Yes. So work with that. You'll find tremendous results, because instead what most people do, you feel a pain and you dwell on the pain. You say, oh my gosh, isn't this awful? I feel crummy. And you're just in a negative funk. This turns it around. You become a law unto yourself. You're declaring the truth. Very good point.
Sometimes I find it helpful just to thank God for life. Thank God that I'm alive. That I have something useful and good to do. And then thank God for the truth. That He didn't make anything wrong. That I can count on the truth. There's wonders to open the heart. What God has for you. And it does heal.
Ask yourself, how often do you do that? I know Elsie, she tells me she does it every morning. She thanks God for life, truth, and love. Because that is being grateful for God. And as Mrs. Eddy brings that out in her chapter on prayer, are you grateful for life, truth, and love? Or are you just, you know, grateful because you have a warm home or you have this or that? I mean, certainly you should be grateful for those things. But first and foremost, we're grateful for God. Because He's the giver of all good anyway.
And the reason why this does heal is because the laws that govern the universe are moral, spiritual laws. That's why they heal. There's no such thing as a material law. When you see the material evidence or you feel the material evidence, it's a lie. This isn't just hope.
Yeah, this isn't just hope. It's the truth.
It's the truth at work.
And in regard to seeing others correctly, you heard that testimony a couple weeks ago that Joanne gave. She started off with Mrs. Evans seeing this. He was a waiter correctly. And at that point, when she first saw him, he was what appeared to be, I would say, almost miserable, certainly very shy. He could hardly talk to you. And then she just loved him. Just as this description of Mrs. Eddy, Mrs. Evans just loved this person. And each time she went to that restaurant, she loved him. And eventually he became a maitre d', became so poised. Was explained he had a lovely family, and I don't think this was brought out, was that his name was Shahid. Shahid knew what Mrs. Evans had done for him. He acknowledged it. It wasn't just that we knew. He knew. And he, even when she no longer saw him, every Christmas she would get a Christmas card from him. He knew what she had done. And it was a huge lesson for all of us here to see this example and to carry it forth. Wherever you go, whoever you're speaking with, if it's a clerk or a waiter or waitress, or love them. Do as Mrs. Eddy did. Search their souls. Do as Benjamin just said. He brought out the good in that person. Loving them. You know, I sometimes take it a challenge if I ever am dealing with someone who seems negative or down. I say, I'm going to make this person smile. And I figure out a way I'm going to do that. But love them and bring out the good in them. And you will find it will work instantly. And just as Benjamin will say, everyone else, well, that person was so grumpy and awful. How come you saw them that way? Well, that's because he saw them that way. If it's your boss, if it's your husband, whoever it is, turn it around, knowing the truth. Bathe them in God's love. It's really our duty and our privilege.
It really is very powerful, because when you see it change, it's like, wait a minute. You know, there was a lady in the shop that I used to go to, and this was my very beginnings in Christian Science, and she was always so nasty to me. You know, when I'm going to check out, her face is all, you know, squeezed up, and I'm like, what is this that this lady does this? And so I started to avoid her. Every time I would go and there was a line, I would go, you know, do whatever I could to avoid her and go to somebody else. But as I learned, I said, no, I have to change this in my own thinking. I have to see this woman right. And believe me, when I started to do that, she just started to be so nice. So the thing about thought being what is operating, you know, it really brought it home to me that I can change, you know, of course, with the power of God and His presence, I can change the situation in my own thinking. And it was one of my first demonstrations of seeing people right. It brought it home.
Wonderful.
Also, you're not just helping that person become a better person. We also help save ourselves from sin, because when you're not seeing somebody right, that's the greatest sin. You're not doing your part as a child of God. But by doing that, like Florence said, the person is not the only person getting healed in this situation. We also get our own salvation too, because if you don't do it, you're getting yourself in trouble.
Well, love yourself and love your neighbor. So I think what was happening, as I was thinking more lovingly or more correctly about myself, then I had, you know, I did it for someone else, and the result is it blesses everyone.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Excellent.
You can't, if you're all grumbly about yourself, you can't be loving towards someone else. You've got to get it right first within yourself. And then you can love that other person and bring out the best in them. You know, Mrs. Evans used to sometimes talk about some people, everywhere they went, they would have a negative experience. Nothing was ever right. Well, it was like, as I like to compare it to Eeyore with the umbrella over his head. They were always seeing things wrong. And because they saw things wrong, nothing was right. They had things to complain about, and they would continue to have things to complain about. While another person could go in with a right and loving attitude and have a wonderful experience. This is how you either bring heaven to earth or hell to earth. I mean, this is one of the tremendous changes with Luann, because she was always, initially, everywhere she went, all these awful things were always happening to her. And it would kind of feed on itself. Finally, she realized the dominion was in her, and she would pray before an experience. Right, Luann? And the experience would end up being quite wonderful. And she would end up healing and talking to the people about the truth. So you take it with you. Make it heaven and not hell.
So that's our golden text.
Yes, and now the next verse, which Elizabeth found something so beautiful. Psalm 2, day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. So, Elizabeth, what did you find? Hope you're there.
I'm here.
Good.
Well, I just thought the word uttereth, I didn't realize it meant so much. And it, when I looked it up in some of the Bible commentaries, explained that it just means to pour forth copiously as a fountain, abundantly and forcefully. And just that image of just good and God, he's pouring forth his lessons every day, renewing every day with his goodness and power. And I just thought that was just a lovely thought.
Thank you. Yeah, she wrote on it in the forum, and it's beautiful. She looked it up in a commentary, and this is what's helpful. You take a simple statement like that you've read a million times, and then you delve into it more deeply, and you find such tremendous meaning. The fact that God is pouring forth his blessings day unto day, and ever new, ever always beautiful and new. But do we go to that fountain every day? Do we expect it? Do we look to it? Or do we just trudge around in the same old ruts we've been in? I mean, God is a good God. He loves us. But we have to turn to him. Spend time with him. You will find it changing your world. It was beautiful. Thank you, Elizabeth, for finding that.
I think that's what they say, well, the sun is shining. How much of it do you want? So.
Exactly. Are you going to be Eeyore with the cloud over his head, the umbrella, and think it's going to rain, no matter what's going on?
Do you go to the well with a little thimble, or do you go with a big pail?
Yeah. And so, even in your darkest hour, you can change things by changing your thought. Even if you feel in the depths of despair. Because right there, Mrs. Eddy said, whether the lesson be ever so severe, right there is God's love waiting for you to deliver, to heal, to save, to bless. Right there it is.
That love is the only law to your being.
Now, Sharon wrote about stand still and consider the wondrous works of God.
Yeah, a lot of times I use that. I feel myself getting caught up in things going on. And if I just say, stand still and see the wondrous works of God, it calms me. And instead of seeing the problem, I can see God's goodness, that he cares for everyone. And it's been a help throughout the years, just calming myself.
Yeah. Peace be still. Stand still. In quietness and in strength shall be your habit. Something like that. I might have the words.
That means a lot.
So, and especially this time of year when there's all this so-called pressure, and that Mrs. Eddy, the only time she says that word pressure is the pressure of the apostolic command to come out from the material world and be separate. If you haven't done that, you're not stepping out of the material world and separating yourself from it, you will find all kinds of pressure, and it ain't going to be nice. And pressure is also known as animal magnetism. When you feel pressure, that's when you say stop. Don't take one step. If anyone is trying to pressure you, I don't care who it is, the salesman, if you don't buy this by today, it's going to be gone. You're going to miss the sale. It's going to be, oh, you're just going to be miserable for the rest of your life. Buy it now. Or some, you know, your Aunt Tilly, you've got to come over. If you don't come over tomorrow, I'm just going to pass out. Whatever the pressure. Or your job, you've got to have this done by in an hour or you're going to be fired. Whatever it is, you just say, nope, not doing it, not going there, not buying into this. animal magnetism. It wears different faces. And if you find you stop and pray and focus on the moment, again, God is with you. Whatever the problem is, it will dispel itself. Don't fall for pressure. Now, yesterday, we had a... Oh, I love this. I wanted someone to read Psalm 102, those verses. I was going to write about it on the forum, but I didn't get a chance. So, let's see. Fairly, are you there? Would you read Psalm 02, those verses? Is anybody ready to do it?
Yes. The ones that are in the lesson.
Yes, thank you.
This shall be written for the generation to come, and the people which shall be created shall praise the Lord. For he hath looked down from the height of his sanctuary to hear the groaning of the prisoner, to loose those that are appointed to death, to declare the name of the Lord in Zion and his praise in Jerusalem. Of old hast thou laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of thy hands.
That is just so beautiful. So, this shall be written for the generations to come. And then think, hear the groaning of the prisoner to those that are appointed to death. You know, especially this time of year, you hear somebody's got this doctor's verdict, some awful thing. God never said that. God didn't say it. It's not the truth. You take this into your heart for the healing of all mankind, all peoples everywhere, the groaning of the prisoners, those who've had some awful verdict laid on them. This is the truth. Beautiful, beautiful verses from the Bible. Thank you, Fairly. Now, who can recap briefly the five kings, their demonic spirits, as they were called? We had a great discussion yesterday in the Bible study. If you didn't listen, please do.
Jeremy's got them.
Jeremy.
Okay. And I'll try to pronounce the names right. Adonizek?
Adonizek.
Okay. He wants to steal peace for that.
It's Adonizek.
Adonizek, yeah. Fairly's practiced all week.
And Hoham is behavior modification. Hiram is stubborn and wants to keep you isolated. Japhia calls attention to yourself.
Jephiah.
And Debir?
Deber.
To speak against others, to accuse or gossip.
Yes. Thank you. Now, we went into depth about those yesterday, which you will find very, very helpful. But one thing I wanted to emphasize, we mentioned that these kings were states of the human mind that would try to ruin you, ruin your connection with God if you allow them. And in Joshua's time, they appeared as these five kings. Now, the point being, what did he do? We talked about he got rid of them, but I found it very interesting, the three things that he did. The first was, Joshua said, roll large stones against the mouth of the cave and set men by it to guard them. They were hiding in a cave. So when you get a bad thought that's not from God, what would rolling a stone over a cave represent?
We're blocking it?
Yes. Shut it out. You don't let it out of the cave, okay? You've got it cornered. Don't let it out. You guard it. You block it off. And the second, he said, So it was when they brought out those kings to Joshua that Joshua called for all the men of Israel and said to the captains of the men of war who went with him, "Come near, put your feet on the necks of these kings." And they drew near and put their feet on their necks. What does that represent in your thinking?
Subjugation.
You have authority over them.
Yes.
Dominion, I do it. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, there are other examples of that, isn't it? Where you, you know, you, Mrs. Eddy says it, I think, too. You put your heel on the serpent. You smack it. Take your heel, you stomp on it. And, of course, that would kill it. But good old Joshua even goes further and says, "Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed. Be strong and of good courage. And thus the Lord will do to all your enemies against whom you fight." And these can be all the terrible thoughts that might come. "And afterward Joshua struck them and killed them and hanged them on 5 trees. And they were hanging on the trees until evening." What does that represent?
Be seeing it for what it is, like when Jesus sent the swine down the hill, self-seeing.
Yeah, that's part of it, but in this instance, what was done to this error?
Exposed.
It's exposed.
It was exposed, but it was also something else. Right. Yes.
Totally destroyed.
Right.
And that's what happens when you testify on a Wednesday evening about an error that you have overcome and destroyed. When you can testify to it, you've destroyed it.
Yeah, that's true. Some people are always, you know, I've known in the culture where people are afraid to testify or, you know, or they don't want to mention what happened or... when you've really seen its nothingness, you can speak about it with authority, and you have destroyed it. Because if you can't, you're still afraid of it, or you're still too proud to admit you had it, or something still is going on.
Or you haven't destroyed it.
Yeah, you haven't destroyed it. So I know it from my own experience. But the point is, you destroy it. The bad thought, I'll call it a bad thought, that comes to you, you make sure it's destroyed. So how do you destroy it? He hung these people for a whole day. That really worked. Okay, so what do you do mentally to destroy something? Because some of you don't. I keep hearing the same problems over again.
We have to hang it in our thought.
Yes.
So when we expose it, we look at it, and we have to let it go and not let it back in.
Yes.
We can't open the door to it anymore.
Yes.
And we do this with humility and also with gratitude that we are able to see through it.
Yes.
And we thank God.
That's right. Good. We have to rip it apart, shred it to bits, and grind it to powder, nothing. Right? But just specifically, what do you know? If an error comes to you, you know it has what?
No power.
No power. Because it's not God. It has no power, no law, no cause, no substance. That is what Sharon said, is ripping it to pieces. If you don't do that, sweetie pies, it's going to come back. You've got to do that. And you can't say, "I don't know how, I'm too weak, I don't know, I'm just a little nothing." You're not a little nothing. What do we read all this stuff for if you're just a little nothing? God gave you dominion. And when you do that, those thoughts will not come back. They're dead. You've hung them out on that tree. You've exposed them. You've put your foot on them. You've shoved them in a cave. They're gone.
Edward Kimball says to rejoice when these things come to you, because that means you know how to get rid of them.
Yes. You don't have a problem unless the answer is there. It would be impossible. The problem comes because you're ready to meet it. So when you go on and on and on with something, whose fault is it?
Wrong.
Your own fault. You're indulging it. Rip it to shreds, and you rip it to shreds by knowing it's not of God, therefore it has no power. It is a belief, part of your belief system that you have been catering to. Get rid of the belief with the understanding of God's all power. And once you do that, as Gary said, you will be able to testify and talk about it with authority. You'll see it as a big, fat nothing. And I know some of you who haven't been experiencing healings, you do look back on your past and think, wow, you know, that once seemed so real, so awful, and now it is like a dream. It never happened. And in truth, it never did. You were dreaming a dream. All of this is an awakening process. Always awakening. Now, there was one question that we didn't get to. There was a lot of all beautiful things to go over, but anyway. Zari, what was the question?
1 minute. I'll pull this back up. I was so involved with your talking that I just... I put it aside because I thought, okay.
No, I hadn't forgotten.
What lessons did Jesus teach his disciples about the storm?
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, what lessons did Jesus teach his disciples about the storm?
I'm going to let somebody else answer it because I have a lot of ideas. I think there are a lot of people online who have a lot to say.
I'm sure that's true. Thank you. And Sharon is always willing to call on those who haven't stepped up yet.
I was thinking that the power of God is in knowing the presence of God always. And Matthew Henry said that when Jesus was asleep in the ship, he was in the helm, which is the pilot's place. He slept, but his heart was awake.
Yes, and that brings up something very important that Jeremy wrote about on the forum.
Well, I just was fascinated at the difference between Christ Jesus sleeping, but being able to wake up and instantly, like, dispel the storm and get rid of that, as opposed to Gethsemane. How the apostles kept falling asleep, even though he kept asking them to stay awake and watch with them, and how they were not ready to use truth at all. So this seems like such a contradiction.
And what is the difference? You know, one of the trainings to be a practitioner that Mrs. Evans gave us, a practitioner, you had to be able to wake up in a moment at night. And I'm telling you, I found a pad. It was in my desk drawer next to my bed. And all of these messages during the night, 2:15, Mrs. Evans is still awake. Get to work. Animal magnetism is busy. Message after message, we would be awoken in the middle of the night, or we would be up in the middle of the night watching. It was a discipline we had to learn, always to be on guard, even in your sleep. Now, the sleep that was at Gethsemane was what kind of sleep?
A mesmeric sleep?
Yes, thank you. A mesmeric sleep, animal magnetism putting you to sleep. And I know for myself, sometimes during the day you can be awake, but you feel really dopey, right? That's a mesmerism. You have to rouse yourself. Or some people go into a very, very deep sleep and, you know, they you can hardly wake them up, as in this case. And I did read recently, and I wish I'd make notes, but I haven't. But anyway, it was that thought that Mrs. Eddy said, that the real sin of that time was is really tough to say, but it was the disciples sleeping.
Slept a lot.
Slept a lot. Well, they slept at the wrong time. And so sometimes people will tell me, oh, they didn't do a good watch or they couldn't watch well. Well, Mrs. Eddy talks about that. You know, that's not uncommon. Era would try to put you to sleep during your watch, and it's up to you to rouse yourself and do the good watch. That's handling the animal magnetism or the mesmerism. You know, you can, it's interesting, you can be awake all day, and then you sit down to do a watch, and what is that all about?
I think, yeah, I thought about them too, because, but I felt maybe they think because Jesus is here, we don't have anything to worry about. After all, he's going to wake up and do the work, so we can sleep as we want. Because they were different individuals when Jesus was ascended.
Right.
They were very, very different. I mean, they became very active. I mean, nobody slept after Jesus was not physically present with them anymore.
Yeah, their resurrection did tremendous amount for them. But certainly, this is one lesson from this storm. And of course, another and a major one, as we as Christian Scientists, is that we know that we can work for the weather and handle storm and other disasters, as Sharon's testimony was about on Wednesday night. And that was a tornado that came down our street. And it was handled, and that nothing was harmed. But we have to be ready. And if you read those pages in Watchers, Prayers, and Arguments on how to handle the weather, Mrs. Eddy says, you're not a Christian Scientist unless you know how to handle the weather. And you do it for your community as well as our nation and the world. It's something you should do every day. Now, coming up, our next Love is a Liberator, which is coming up quickly, is going to be on watching. We are really emphasizing it for the next few weeks and have been. And a major part of it is going to be Florence's. Florence wrote a very large sort of an article on various watches or things that need to be handled and the solutions to it. So that's going to be part of this watch booklet, Love is a Liberator, the importance of it. We have a few articles, and there's one that I found today that I want to be put into, and I guess I'm going to conclude on this because our time is drawing short. Did have things in miscellaneous writings, but we'll get to that another time. And another thing that I want you to be working with is the Dixon letter. I think at some point we're going to talk about that at the roundtable. The Dixon letter, it's been on the carousel. It is on our website. It's by Frederick Dixon, and it's one all working scientists should know about. So, anything, Zara, you wanted to add?
No, I really think that it's what you talked about, the awakening from this mesmeric, thought that would like to put us to sleep. But I see that so often, and that's what I've been working on also on my healing sketchbook. This is a topic that comes up all the time.
Thank you. And that's a good idea, healing sketchbook. Some of you might write it, some of it you could draw it, but you see, you're seeing the perfection of mankind. And seeing it is important. Now, this is from a book called The Healer, and it starts on page 171. Three times a day, Mrs. Eddy took time to work for the cause of Christian Science and for all the world. What evil Mrs. Eddy kept at bay while she was here, we may never fully know or appreciate. James Gilman relates the following on this topic, Recollections of Mary Baker Eddy, page 48. Quote, malicious animal magnetism had been trying all over the land to precipitate evil, leading into all sorts of sin and destruction, seeking to lay its work to Christian Scientists. But said she, I have been holding it back. As was mentioned in the beginning of this book, a whole volume could be written on what work Mrs. Eddy did for the world in holding crime and evil in check. Mrs. Eddy once told her household, quote, "If I should be taken from you, the students will have to do a great deal of work for the universal welfare to make up for what I have done," end quote. They say our dear leader went out aside three times a day to pray for the whole world. Mrs. Mims told me that Mrs. Eddy did not need that anyone should tell her the affairs of the nation, because her spiritual insight was such that she knew the conditions of every court in Europe. The world was her patient, and she knew the needs of her patient. She gave us the Christian Science Monitor partly to make us world workers. We must know the needs of our patient, the world, and meet them spiritually and daily. So it goes on, but you get the picture. You get the picture what she did, what was done, and what we must do. And we take this work extremely seriously. As you know, a lot is going on in the world today. We're going to have an election of our president in another year, and this work must be done, and it must be done now, and it must be done well. So we will rise to that challenge, and we will keep ourselves awake and working and see the present perfection of our world. We'll see it and know it and thus experience it.
Thank you.
Bell is rung. We will go forward to a good...
Well, a great celebration.
Thank you.